Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan. And as usual, you're listening at CindySheehanSoapbox.com. I hope you enjoyed our show with Yoko Ono last week. If you haven't had a chance to listen to it, you can go to the archives at the website, CindySheehanSoapbox.com. And I'd like to thank you all for the good comments that you've sent me about the show that we had with Yoko Ono. It was a very special soapbox and a great way to start 2011. And unfortunately, 2 days after I taped the show and the day before it aired for the first time, there was that horrible incident in Tucson, Arizona. And I wrote a blog called Violence from Tucson to Datakal, and it's on my blog spot at Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. blogspot.com if you'd like to read it. And it's about correlating the violence that happens in the United States every day with the violence that the United States perpetrates around the world. So I hope you check that out at my blog spot. Well, today our show is very topical. Our two topics are the anniversary of Roe v. Wade and also the anniversary of the opening of Guantanamo Bay Prison and the anniversary of 2 years since Barack Obama promised to close it, and it hasn't been closed. So our guests today are Summer Lowen, an activist in San Francisco, and Matt D'Aloisio, who's fasting in front of the White House. Stay tuned, and when you come back, we'll be on the air with Summer Lowen.
Now, there's one thing you might have noticed I don't complain about. Politicians. Everybody complains about politicians. Everybody says they suck.
Yeah.
Well, where do people think these politicians come from? They don't fall out of the sky. They don't pass through a membrane from another reality. They come from American parents and American families, American homes, American schools, American churches, American businesses, and American universities, and they're elected by American citizens. This is the best we can do, folks. This is what we have to offer. It's what our system produces. Garbage in, garbage out. If you have selfish, ignorant citizens, you're going to get selfish, ignorant leaders. And term limits ain't going to do you any good. You're just going to wind up with a brand new bunch of selfish, ignorant Americans. So maybe it's not the politicians who suck. Maybe something else sucks around here, like the public. Yeah, the public sucks. There's a nice campaign slogan for somebody. The public sucks. Fuck hope. Fuck hope. Because if it's really just the fault of these politicians, then where are all the other bright people of conscience? Where are all the bright, honest, intelligent Americans ready to step in and save the nation and lead the way? We don't have people like that in this country. Everybody's at the mall, scratching his ass, picking his nose, taking his credit card out of his fanny pack and buying a pair of sneakers with lights in them. So I have solved this little political dilemma for myself in a very simple way. On election day, I stay home. I don't vote. Fuck 'em. Fuck 'em. I don't vote. Two reasons I don't vote. First of all, it's meaningless. This country was bought and sold and paid for a long time ago. The shit they shuffle around every 4 years doesn't mean a fucking thing. And secondly, I don't vote because I believe if you vote, you have no right to complain. People like to twist that around, I know. They say, well, if you don't vote, you have no right to complain. But where's the logic in that? If you vote and you elect dishonest, incompetent people, and they get into office and screw everything up, well, you are responsible for what they have done. You caused the problem. You voted them in. You have no right to complain. I, on the other hand, who, in fact, did not even leave the House on election day, I'm in no way responsible for what these people have done and have every right to complain as loud as I want about the mess you created that I had nothing to do with. So I know that a little later on this year you're going to have another one of those really swell presidential elections that you like so much. You'll enjoy yourselves. It'll be a lot of fun. I'm sure as soon as the election is over, your country will improve immediately. As for me, I'll be home on that day doing essentially the same thing as you. The only difference is when I get finished masturbating, I'm going to have a little something to show for it, folks. Thank you very much.
I will promise you this, that if we have not gotten our troops out by the time I am president, It is the first thing I will do. I will get our troops home. We will bring an end to this war. You can take that to the bank.
That's a fountain of conversation, man. That's a geyser. I mean, whoa, Teddy, stand back, man.
Summer Lullin is a San Francisco activist and an organizer. She was an intern at my campaign when I ran for Congress in 2008. And this year she's organizing the pro-choice rally in San Francisco on the anniversary of Roe v. Wade. Summer, welcome to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be on here.
Well, thank you. And I did introduce you, and I told the people who are listening that you were one of the interns on my campaign in 2008.
Yes, I remember when we were brainstorming about this show, so it's really exciting to be a guest on here 3 years later. It's fabulous.
I know, huh? I know, we were. We did brainstorm about Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox, and when we were on Green 960 there in San Francisco. So tell us about BACOR. First of all, what does BACOR stand for, and what are you all planning this month?
Sure. So BACOR stands for the Bay Area Coalition for Reproductive Rights, and it's a multi-issue coalition, obviously, here in the Bay Area. We started in 1988 helping clinics defend themselves against people that were involved with Operation Rescue. So we would come and help. Well, I wasn't around at the time, but it started with women going to clinics and defending them against these anti-choice people that would come and harass women going to get abortions. And since then, the focus has really shifted to focusing on this pro-choice event that we're planning every January. So the event that we're planning this January is happening on January 22nd, and it's around the anniversary of Roe v. Wade. It's actually the 38th anniversary, and it is a really vibrant pro-choice event that's made up of different really interesting characters in San Francisco. The Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence are there.
Mm-hmm.
And we started it because a large anti-choice contingency comes into San Francisco every year called the Walk for Life West Coast. And they are they're funded by the Catholic Church, and they bus in thousands of people to come in and walk against abortion rights and women's rights.
And why do you think they come to San Francisco to do that?
I think they come because they consider San Francisco a really liberal base. Mm-hmm. They probably imagine it as full of very, you know, caring, compassionate people who are for abortion, for gay rights, and those are things that they really don't care for. So, you know, it's the Catholic Church, so they really aren't very pro-women and they're not pro-gay. So I think they find San Francisco the perfect place to make their stand with their, you know, regressive policies.
But well,
No,
go ahead.
Oh, so our event, January 22nd, we're kicking off at 11 a.m. and we're having a mini rally. It's happening at Harry Bridges Plaza in front of the Ferry Building in San Francisco. It's at Market and Embarcadero Streets. And then at noon, we'll kick it off and march down the Embarcadero.
And is that to join or confront or be near the anti-choice rally?
It will be, yeah. So the march is really to create a really fun and exciting event to celebrate women's rights and the anniversary of Roe v. Wade. And we're also there to counter the anti-choice group and counter their regressive policies. And, you know, because there's a lot of youth there, it's a really great opportunity for them to see an alternate point of view that they may not get at home or in church.
A lot of youth that come to the anti-choice rally.
Yes, a lot of youth come. Yeah, they're very heavily targeted by the Walk for Life. They have youth group parties before the event, they have youth group parties after the event, and they literally bust them in. So it's a really great opportunity for them to see that there's a different point of view.
Well, when my son, Casey, was killed in Iraq in 2004, I was living in Vacaville. Before Casey was killed, I got fired from the Catholic Church. I was a youth minister, and I got fired. But I was a youth minister in the Catholic Church for, like, 8 years. And I was very you know, well respected in the community, and we had tons of friends, and there was a really huge response, just an outpouring of love and support from our community in Vacaville and our community at St. Mary's, until I started to speak out against the war and against George Bush. And then all of our friends in Vacaville started to shun me because they said that George Bush was pro-life, and that's why they were going to vote for him.
Oh,
can you talk a little bit about the hypocrisy of saying that George Bush or, you know, specifically I want to say the Republican Party, because, you know, at least the Democrats give lip service, and a lot of them are very pro-choice and pro-female reproductive rights. Can you talk a little bit about that hypocrisy of saying that somebody's pro-life when he's waging wars that are killing hundreds of thousands of people?
Sure, sure. Well, first of all, I'm so sorry. That's such a horrible thing for people to do. I mean, that's ridiculous. But yeah, I think you expressed it really clearly. I mean, obviously, these people are not pro-life. They're pro-birth. They want women to carry a child to term and have a baby. And then after that child is born, they do nothing to help with services. You know, they're not working for, free preschool. They're not funding education. They're not funding health care. But they are funding war. So I think what they just really want are people to do their bidding for them. You know, they're sending people off to war. They're, you know, encouraging this incredible culture of violence with, you know, Sarah Palin's targeted map, for instance. I mean, what a horrible tragedy for that to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And yet she claims she's pro-life. You know, it's ridiculous. It's a complete hypocrisy.
Well, and then also talk about there is also some ambiguity between saying that, you know, people on the left or progressive people are against violence, and of course I'm just playing the devil's advocate here because
right.
I'm totally for a woman's reproductive right, and I'm totally pro-choice, even was when I was Catholic. But talk about a little bit about that when people say, oh, you're such a hypocrite because you're against wars, but you're for this war on fetuses or whatever the people say.
Sure, yeah. I think what it really comes down to is having control over your own life and having control over your own body. And that's what, you know, Democrats, you're right, pay lip service to it, or what, you know, independent people think. You know, they are very much against war and very much against killing people and, you know, especially innocent people that have done nothing wrong. But there's a difference between a person who's, you know, 5 years old, 20 years old, whatever, and a fetus or a zygote growing inside of you. That, you know, those cells can't live outside of your body. It's not a person in there. It's not a pre-born individual. And on top of that, you are the one who is responsible for this life. You're the one who is going to, you know, give birth, raise this child, and if you aren't equipped to do that, or you don't have, you know, the ability to do that, why should you be forced to do that? So it's really about respecting people,
mm-hmm.
I think, is like the main difference here.
Well, and also, you know, as well as being pro-choice and pro-peace is that we're also pro-human rights. And,
yes.
You know, we believe in a society that is healthy for everybody, you know, from womb to tomb. And
absolutely.
That does have accessible, free or cheap child care and health care and good education and a clean environment and so many things that go in, sex education, birth control, you know, so many things that contribute to a healthy society that would support families. And no matter what they decide, people should be supported anyway. But if we had a world that cared more about human rights and more about profit, then this would hardly be an issue, I think.
I really agree with your point. I think that, you know, it really is about respecting the individual and respecting the person's choice and respecting who they are versus seeing them as someone to make money off of or seeing them as people just to, you know, do your bidding or help you rise to power.
Well, Summer, a lot of people in the Bay Area listen to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox, so if you'd like to give a website where people can get more information and then repeat the date and the time and the place of the rally.
Absolutely. So they can get more information at our website, which is www.bacorr.org. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/bacorr, Bacor. And the event, again, is January 22nd, the 30th anniversary of Roe v. Wade, and it's kicking off at 11 a.m. with a rally at Harry Bridges Plaza, which is right in front of the Ferry Building at Market and Embarcadero Streets, and then we will march at noon.
And I'm going to be there.
And Cindy will be there, yes.
And us off. Again, I was there a few years ago speaking and speaking for human rights and choice, and I'll be proud to be there again and join everybody in solidarity.
Absolutely. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for this opportunity, Cindy.
Oh, Summer, thank you for being on Cindy Sheehan Soapbox, and I'll see you soon.
Sounds great.
Okay. You did great. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Our next guest is Matthew D'Aloisio, and Matthew is with Witness Against Torture, fasting in front of the White House for the closing of Guantanamo Bay prison camp. Matt, welcome to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Well, thanks. It's good to be here.
Well, I should say welcome back, because you were our guest 2 years ago, weren't you?
Oh, it's 2 years already, yes.
And during that interview, we talked about the fact that Barack Obama had promised to close Guantanamo. I don't think that we spoke after he signed the order. I think it might have been before we signed the order. But tell my listeners, give a little recap of what you're doing now and what's been transpiring in that 2 years.
Sure. Well, folks will remember that 2 days into the Obama administration, President Obama signed an executive order promising to close Guantanamo within a one-year time frame. At that time, the group Witness Against Torture, we were down in D.C., engaged in a fast from January 11th until the inauguration, in the hopes that President Obama would do precisely what he did. We were not happy with the one-year time frame, but we were happy that one of the first steps he took in office was to take steps to right a very wrong of the Bush administration. After he signed the executive order, we had planned on being in D.C. for 100 days, and a lot of people said, well, he won. You should go home now.
Uh-huh.
He signed the executive order. Guantanamo is closing. And we talked about it, and we decided, you know what, if we really want him to do this, we need to keep pressure on him. And so we stayed here for 100 days, and we lobbied, and we spoke out, and we vigiled, and we risked the rest. And at the end of that 100 days, on April 30th, we had people arrested on the White House sidewalk who were representing the prisoners in Guantanamo who were cleared for release. Unfortunately, we find ourselves now 2 years later, and Guantanamo is still open. And those 89 men who were cleared for release by the Bush administration and now by the Obama administration still remain in Guantanamo. And if that wasn't bad enough, now it seems as if President Obama is going to sign an executive order instituting a program of indefinite detention for over 40 men who are at Guantanamo.
Wow.
So when things looked optimistic and hopeful 2 years ago, they've quickly shifted. And the public discussion has also shifted back to terms that were used in 2002 and 2003 about the men in Guantanamo, even though all of the facts have laid out that the men there simply are not the worst of the worst, remain people who mostly were picked up by accident, or were picked up by forces other than American, many of whom were sold to the Americans, and many of whom still wait in Guantanamo for it to be closed.
And why do you think that after 2 years, after Barack Obama did sign that executive order, that the situation is still continuing?
You know, it's a tough thing to speculate about what's in another person's mind, and it's hard to know what if it was simply a political calculation or a conscious compromise on principle. Mm-hmm. But the fact remains that what was a campaign promise, in fact, what was a campaign promise of John McCain as well, that Guantanamo would close slowly, but some might say deliberately, became a broken promise that the Obama administration took little to no leadership in taking steps towards making Guantanamo close. The first real bad sign we had was when a federal judge in D.C. during the Bush administration, during the end of the Bush administration, ordered a number of Guantanamo prisoners immediately released into the United States. This was a large victory and could have been the beginning of the end of Guantanamo. The Bush administration, not surprisingly, appealed that decision. But Bush left office while that appeal was still open. And there was a great hope the Obama administration would not keep that appeal open. But in fact, the Obama administration has adopted the arguments of the Bush administration.
Right.
And unfortunately won. And so the first opportunity to start Guantanamo's closure was prevented by the Obama administration itself. And so while there's enough blame to go around, Congress is surely sharing in the blame. The American people are surely sharing in some part of the blame. The Department of Justice, where we've been many days so far in this fast, shares the blame. The real leadership for this issue should and was promised to come from the Obama administration, and they have failed miserably.
In fact, isn't there some kind of litigation being attempted in Spain against the Bush administration by some former Guantanamo detainees that's also being blocked by the Obama administration?
Well, one of the things that was learned through many of the documents leaked through WikiLeaks and through the courage, possibly the courage of Bradley Manning, is the fact that now the Obama administration is not only denying any sort of accountability for torture domestically, but going so far as to interfere with people who are trying to hold people accountable internationally.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell my listeners what you and Witness Against Torture are doing from January 11th to the 22nd in Washington, D.C., and why those dates are significant. Why is January 11th and why is January 22nd significant?
So January 11th is the date on which, in 2002, the first plane full of prisoners arrived at Guantanamo, the official opening of Guantanamo. So about 3 months, 4 months after September 11th, Guantanamo was open. January 22nd is the date on which President Obama promised it would be closed in 2009, and it remains open. So we want to mark those 2 days. And so we started a fast on January 11th. Over 100 people around the country are participating. We have currently over 60 people in Washington, D.C., who are participating. On the 11th itself, over 300 folks gathered at the White House for a rally in front of the White House and a procession with 173 people in orange jumpsuits representing the 173 people who remain at Guantanamo. That procession went to the Department of Justice, where we proceeded to block three entrances to the Department of Justice, and we closed down the building for about a half an hour. They chose not to make any arrests on that day. And so we continue in D.C. to vigil, to fast, and to visit the Department of Justice every day, to do some lobbying, to do some other creative actions through this time together.
Have you all tried to make an appointment with President Obama?
We've tried to meet with everyone who we could possibly meet with. We've done, since last year, we've been on over 70 lobbying visits. We have hand-delivered letters around Guantanamo to every member of the House and the Senate. We tried to meet with the Obama administration, and our requests for meetings have been ignored, not even denied, but ignored. We have met with the Department of Justice, which leads us to go back there. Back in June, we met with some officials at the Department of Justice. At that meeting, we raised our concerns and we were promised follow-up meetings with people responsible for the policies we were concerned about. Since that meeting back in June, we've sent 3 other letters to the Department of Justice. We've called hundreds of times, and we have not gotten so much as a return phone call or email from them.
Oh, wow. Well, we appreciate your work and your, you know, your persistence and your sacrifice. And, you know, tell everybody there that I and my listeners send our solidarity. I am fasting in solidarity with you all, even though I couldn't make it to D.C. this year. But tell my listeners a website they can go to. I know you send out daily blogs about the fast, and not only do you send out blogs about the fast, but they're very informative and have you know, information about Guantanamo, about the latest updates, about what's going on. And so tell my listeners how they can, a website they can access, or what else they can do to support you there, because this is going to air on Sunday, and you all will still be there doing the fast.
Great, yes. So www.witnesstorture.org is our webpage, and there you'll find a number of things, including our schedule in D.C., ways to sign up to receive daily emails, ways to sign up to receive monthly emails, lobbying materials. There's a new petition that was crafted by the Center for Constitutional Rights, Amnesty International, and ourselves, and many groups and individuals are signing on to that. So there are many ways you can help in this campaign.
Great. And Matt, again, many thanks for what you do. It's such an important issue. Well, I want to ask you one more thing before you leave. A lot of people tell me, and, you know, I've done a lot of activism around Guantanamo. I've been down to Guantanamo. But people say that, you know, we close Guantanamo. There's still many other prisons around the world. There's Bagram. There's still CIA torture sites. Is it just a symbolic victory that we're seeking, or is this something that would be something to profoundly celebrate if Guantanamo was closed?
Right. So if Guantanamo is simply closed and moved somewhere else, to one of the, frankly, other Guantanamos that exist internationally or even domestically, then absolutely it is not a victory.
Right.
Some folks would say Guantanamo is more than a symbol, though, that Guantanamo in some ways is a linchpin. And if we can get Guantanamo closed with some sort of justice, so not just returning people to other prisons, but closing Guantanamo with justice can be an example of what needs to be done in places like Bagram and in places like Florence, Colorado, where people are being imprisoned in the United States, like Quantico, Virginia, where Bradley Manning is undergoing solitary confinement without even being charged, without having any trial on the horizon.
Right.
So the problems that exist in Guantanamo didn't simply arise in Guantanamo. They came from systems that exist in our country and in our prisons abroad.
Well, thank you so much, Matt. And again, give our solidarity and love to everybody who's there. And you guys stay warm and stay healthy and stay safe.
All right. Well, good to be with you in spirit, Cindy, if not in body. And hopefully we'll talk again soon.
Okay, and hope to see you soon. Thank you, Matt.
Take care.
That was Matthew Dalloisio, and before Matthew, we heard Summer Lowen. Well, that's Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox for this week. As always, I'd like to thank you for listening. I'd like to thank my engineer, Scott Cuddy, my webmaster, Rich Bowser, my producer, Mikey, our guest, and I hope you tune back in next week. This is Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan.
I must make my witness. I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. Dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust.
shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Punks are running wild in the street. There's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it. We know the air is unfit to breathe, and our food is unfit to eat. We sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes. As if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house, and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad. I don't want you to protest. I don't want you to riot. I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crime in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
They're yelling in Baton Rouge.